We're the biggest debtor nation in history. Our annual payment on our debt is $1 trillion. Mm-hmm. If I paid $1 a second, okay, $1 a second, how long would it take me to pay off $1 trillion? 31,688 years.
Is about more than just a regular gym routine. When was the last time you checked on your financial fitness? If you're feeling like you're falling behind, Ed Sedell is here to help with The Retirement Trainer, a podcast about helping you get into better financial shape. Every week, Ed talks about things you need to know to become more financially fit for your future. Learn about things like how much money will you need, financial mistakes other people often make, and how you can avoid them. Plus, details on The Retirement Fitness Plan, a plan Ed personally created to help you get to and through retirement by focusing on 5 key areas of your financial life. Learn more about The Retirement Fitness Plan when you visit egsifinancial.com and click on Processes. Then subscribe, follow, and listen to The Retirement Trainer on Apple Podcasts, your iHeart app, or whichever podcast platform you prefer.
Robert, I really appreciate you joining the podcast today. I've been looking forward to this for the last couple weeks. Your Rich Dad, Poor Dad book, that was very influential for me. I think I read it the first time back in 98 or 99. You emphasized in that book that the rich, they don't work for money. So right now, you know, how do you see this philosophy really evolving in today's digital kind of gig economy where there's multiple streams of income that are more accessible? Has anything changed, or do you think your philosophies still kind of hold true?
Well, I think it's very brave of you to have me on your show, because I flew these in Vietnam, U.S. Marine, and as it killed a lot of people. And so, but Marines are not known for their tact and civility. And I'm an academy graduate on top of it, so we're pretty nasty. But anyway, I wrote this book here, which is Who Stole My Pension. I thought this was you. Edward Sedell. So, the reason I mention that is because most of my Marine pilot friends mm-hmm. went to fly for the airlines. And as you know, their pensions were stolen.
Yes.
And I think the biggest problem today, Ed, is my generation. I'm 1974. I got out of the Marine Corps, but that was the year ERISA came in. Mm-hmm. And the Employee Retirement Security Act. Anytime it's security, you know they're lying to you. So my generation is the first one with a defined contribution pension plan, which is a 401k or IRA. Mm-hmm. And my concern is right now that my generation, I'll be 78, and we're the first ones retiring with a DC, a 401k type plan. And what's killing them is inflation. They don't have enough to survive on. And it's a little bit late at 78 to be trying to stack a few more bucks away. So I think the biggest challenge facing my generation, at least, as far as retirement, is inflation. And I thank, you know, communist Biden and communist Kamala for that. I went to the academy. My background is oil. I studied oil. And I graduated in 69, then joined the Marine Corps in 69. Mm-hmm. But anyway, what I know about oil is that when Biden came to office, he cut the Keystone Pipeline. That was his first act. I knew exactly what that son of a bitch was doing. He cut the pipeline. I was still under Trump, and I had good friends. I wrote 2 books with the guy. He cut the pipeline. Under Trump, I was selling oil for $30 a barrel. Mm-hmm. The next day, oil went to $130 a barrel. So I knew exactly what Biden and Kamala were doing. They want to create a wedge between the rich and the poor, middle class. So when inflation went through the roof, that was our first act. Second act was to take down Trump's wall. Those guys are criminals. And so what is jamming my generation now is because that's where my generation cannot afford to retire, because they're the first generation with a 401k. Now, I retired years and years and years and years ago. I don't have any stocks or bonds or mutual funds or ETFs. I'm pure real estate. Trump and I are really good friends. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest challenge facing my generation, or your thing, which I thought was interesting, that your retirement trainer, how does a guy at 78 recover if inflation is eating his retirement? That's my question.
You know what? And that's a great question, because it becomes almost impossible depending on how much you've saved or haven't saved. I was just having this conversation with some friends last night at dinner, and you know, we were talking about taxes on real estate. And we're seeing right now, you know, we're in Columbus, Ohio, where we are seeing people that have worked their entire lives, they paid off their homes. They're on fixed incomes, like you said, you know, defined contribution plans instead of defined benefit pension plans, and they can't afford the increase in taxes. So they're going to be forcefully removed from their homes. And that's what's criminal. And so, you know, it goes back to that we've been hearing over the last couple of years, you know, you will own nothing and like it. So you, right? I mean, think about that. So you may have paid off the mortgage, but if you're having to continue to pay those property taxes, you know, do you really own that property? Right. Because if you don't pay the taxes and, you know, they can forcefully remove you from that property, do you actually, or have you actually ever owned it, or are you just renting it? And it's becoming more and more prevalent. And I love the fact that you're on the alternative and investing side, right? You're not stocks and bonds and mutual funds and ETFs.
I don't think I'm alternative. I think I'm a capitalist.
Capitalist. Yeah, there you go. Yes. Yes.
You know what I mean?
I agree. Right. Be gold and silver. If you look at what happens to gold and silver this year, gold's up over 30%. Silver, depending on the day, is approaching 40%. And look at Bitcoin. Looking at, you know, some of the non-traditional and moving to where money is. And I think having Trump add to his platform, you know, cryptos and Bitcoin, it's interesting to see where that's going to go after the election. Are we going to be moving away from the CBDC, central bank digital currency, where, you know, financial institutions have ultimate control, kind of like what we saw in China since 2006, or because the financial institutions are going to be decentralized, do you think that financial institutions are going to be less relevant? What's your view on that?
My goals are different because I had a rich dad, and my rich dad told me to stay away from anything the government could print. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, stock certificates. I have none of that stuff. So that's why when I was like 10 years old, I started on a different financial education path. And I was able to retire at a very young age, and my income keeps going up. So, you know, today I'm not a Bitcoin whale, but I have 75 Bitcoin, and that's in the millions right now. So I got a late start. I was buying it at 6,000. So I'm pretty happy right now. I own gold mines. And I own silver mines. So I'm a capitalist. I own the mine. And my goal as a young man was to take a company public on Toronto Stock Exchange, New York Stock Exchange, and NASDAQ. So I've taken three companies public on three different exchanges. So I do have stocks, but they're my stocks. I control the company. And that's why I'm happy to be talking to you, because I feel for these guys who are my age today. And they've had bad financial advice. And then this book here is another friend of mine, Jim Rickards. It's How AI is Affecting the Banking Industry. As he wrote me, this is a pre-copy. He says, Robert, something new to worry about. Everybody's excited about AI, but you can see I study. Not bad for me, you know what I mean? And what he's saying here is everybody's excited about AI. But Rickards is saying AI is going to bring... AI is already bringing down the banking industry. Well, so it's an interesting time. So that's why your advice has more relevance today than probably 10 years ago, because everything's changed in 10 years.
It's changing from day to day with the advent of AI, the way it's escalating. So what are your thoughts on AI and those companies like NVIDIA and Google and Microsoft that are...
I don't play that game. I really don't like stocks. I own stocks. They're my stocks. You know, when you read a prospectus, I'm a selling shareholder, not a buying shareholder. All coins have three sides, heads, tails, and edge. I'm on the other side of the coin, the capitalist side. I'm not a consumer side. So that's why I want Rich Dad Poor Dad. That's my board game back there to teach financial education. That's what I do. Practice what I teach, should I say.
Well, financial literacy has always kind of been part of your mission. And do you think the lack of financial education being taught and the lack of financial literacy has really caused a lot of the situation that we're in right now as far as debt? I mean, going from the largest creditor nation in history to the largest debtor nation in history?
You're on it. You're on it, on it, on it. We're the biggest debtor nation in history. Our annual payment on our debt is $1 trillion. We don't collect that much in taxes. We're bankrupt. And nobody says that, you know, so that's why I thought it was interesting that I thought you were this guy here, Ed Sedell. And he and I talk about pensions and all that, but I'm glad you're doing what you're doing, because I think if you can sound the alarm to boomers, this is not your daddy's retirement. This is a very different world today. And
it is.
The Fed, as you know, is a Marxist organization. This book here is about the Fed. It's a creature from Jekyll Island. You can say, yeah. I study. And it's Marxist, you know?
Oh, it's completely Marxist. Yes. We were talking about that last night. A friend of mine, his son, who's 25 years old, just got done reading it as well. So I think it's starting to transcend the younger.
This book here?
Yeah. Creature from Jekyll Island.
Yep. Hey, you guys tuning in, read this book. It'll open your eyes. Anyway, keep going.
No. And it is. It's scary when you read books like that, and it really is talking about financial literacy. These are the things that aren't being taught in school, whether it's in, you know, primary, secondary education or at the collegiate level. Keynesian economic theory that we all know doesn't work, because that's now the situation why we're in the situation that we're in right now.
Yeah. In 1965, I was 18 years old. I got nominations to Naval Academy and Merchant Marine Academy. I took Merchant Marine Academy, but we're the highest paid graduates in the world in 65. But my economics teacher had me read this book here. He was a West Point graduate. Instead of studying that stupid economics they teach you in school, you should study the economists. So Marx is one of the biggest economists of all, so does Mises and all those characters. So I had a military education because we had to be prepared to know thy enemy and kill him. I love the U.S. Marine Corps. Man, I was a punky surfer kid, you know. And boy, they take no bullshit. You just get your job.
So what made you want to join one of the academies? Was that always a goal?
I really wanted to sail the world. So when I was a kid, I watched that movie, Mutiny on the Bounty or something like that. Anyway, mm-hmm. It was about how these guys sailed to Tahiti. And so when I was 16 years old, I went to see my guidance counselor. I'm flunking out of school. I flunked out of high school. I'm an F student.
Really?
Yeah. I can't write. But my book is number one in the world for 25 years. You know what I mean? So anyway, you know how schools are. Whatever they tell you can't do, you're probably good at it.
That's right.
I'm talking to my guidance counselor. She says, what do you want to do? I said, I want to sail to Tahiti. I want to go to Quinn's Bar and get laid. She goes, you don't have very high aspirations. I said, well, sure. But, you know what I mean? I'm an 16-year-old kid. That's what I want to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
She was great. She says, this is the school that'll get you there. So what school is that? She said, Kings Point. My congressman, Daniel K. Inouye, gave me Annapolis. And so I reapplied to him. I said, no, I don't want to go to Annapolis. I want to go to Kings Point and sail to Quinn's Bar and chase women and get drunk. And so Senator Inouye was a Medal of Honor winner, you know, from Hawaii, the 442nd in World War II. And he says, why do you want to go to Tahiti? I said, drink beer and chase women. But, you know, it gets you through school, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Honestly, you got to love it.
Yeah. The same thing when people talk to me about retirement, I said, you better find something you're interested in. I love real estate. I played Monopoly, you know, four greenhouses, 1031, tax deferred exchanges. And so Trump and I are really, really good friends. We wrote two books together. This is my shirt with Trump, Midas Touch. And I'm selling these for $50, and $50 goes to Trump's campaign. And he's a very good man. His sons and I are really good friends. They're just, as compared to Hunter Biden, like father, like son, as they say. I hope the guy's not Democrats, but anyway.
No.
Ohio's where Vance is from, too, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I was pretty excited. I know originally people were probably disappointed in the pick. I don't know why. I had met JD a while ago, but the first time I actually saw him once he was in office was after the train crash in northern Ohio, East Palestine.
Right.
The first representative of the U.S. government of any kind there, because Buttigieg never showed. And so not just empathy, but his compassion to the people and bringing to light the actual problems that were happening. I was like, okay, this guy really understands what's going on. And obviously to see him from his upbringing, his history, to literally pulling himself up from his bootstraps to where he is today. It's just, you know, that's the American dream. That's what we all aspire to. I hope our kids do too. So, you know, I think that that was a great pick. I really do.
His book, Hillbilly Elegy, was a fabulous book. And then I read it because he's a Marine also. We all need that, especially boys. We need that core discipline. You don't have that, you wind up like Hunter Biden with porno and drugs and all this stuff, you know. And Donald Trump's two sons, Don Jr. and Eric, are good friends of mine. We hunt, we camp all over the world together. They're good kids. They're really good kids. So like father, like son. So when I watched old Hunter Biden and then Kamala, where did you find this guy Waltz from? The Salvation Army store or something?
Yeah, Robert, that's what did they say? What's the saying? To find the true character of a man, just look at his children. Right. Isn't or something along those lines. I'm paraphrasing. Correct. But
a child psychiatrist. But
right. What a true statement that is. So let me ask you this. After the election, what, you know, Trump's energy policies, the policies that he had enacted before that have since changed. Right. And what I think he's going to enact going forward. What do you think the impact that that's going to have, not just on the economy, but the leadership in resolving maybe some of the debt? Do you think that that's a possibility?
No. I'm afraid the debt's too far gone. I hate to be a pessimist, but as you know, if our annual payment on a debt is $1 trillion, this is the question I ask people. Mm-hmm. If I paid $1 a second, okay, $1 a second, how long would it take me to pay off $1 trillion? 31,688 years.
Wow. Is that what it is? 31,000. Holy cow.
31,688 years. But that was started by, you know, Tricky Dick Nixon, August 15th, 1971.
When we got off the gold standard.
Yes. They didn't call him Tricky Dick for nothing.
Yeah. You know, when people don't understand that the U.S. dollar is, I mean, it's a fiat currency backed by the full faith and credit that the U.S. dollar is going to remain the reserve currency. And if we don't have a strong energy policy here in the U.S., we could be the largest energy producer in the world, but we are.
Yes, we can be. Yeah.
And if we're not, we're going to lose that reserve currency threshold in a heartbeat. And then BRICS, it started off with 5 and 6 and 10. I think now there's an additional 30 or 40 nations that want to get involved in that.
They hate us.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. With all the debt that we have, I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure if we're not going to surpass it, we're going to be pretty close to $36 trillion in national debt by the time of the on the day of the election, right? I mean, it's going to be pretty doggone close. And if we don't start to get a strong energy policy, our standard of living with all the debt, it's going to be dramatically changed. And those that aren't prepared, those that do not have precious metals and commodities and those things that can't be controlled, you know, their way of life is going to change not just drastically, but dramatically. I think.
Correct. There's another book out that people should read. It's this When Money Destroys Nations. That's about Zimbabwe. And it's written by a friend of mine, Philip Haslam. And it's a very good read. It's eye-opening, especially for, you know, the people you talk to and all this. It talks about what happens when Zimbabwe started to print money to pay its bills. And it's a very easy read. Very easy read. But I was in Zimbabwe. I'm a hunter. I was on this person's properties, Afrikaners, white people, when they call them the war vets, pulled in, the black guys with the AK-47s. I'm back in Vietnam again, but this time I'm carrying a double rifle, you know, for elephant gun. And these black guys pull up with AK-47s, and they grab this little white woman and her husband, and they basically put the barrels of their AKs in their mouth and tell them, get off this property. And I'm sitting there watching it, you know, from my truck. So they basically took the land. They took everything. Black guys did. Yeah, I'm sitting there going, I thought I was in a movie or something. You know, I mean, it was so surreal. And this little lady comes up to me. She's Afrikaan. She's like kind of little granny. She goes, burn this place down. Burn it down. Burn it down. So yeah, there was my professional hunter, myself, with our torches. We burned down their farmhouses. She says, leave nothing for those bastards. So I'm sitting there going, and it was like a movie. Do you know what I mean? So I'm walking through this. So I would suggest people get this book here, because I was just in Kenya about 6 months ago. And this woman from Kenya stood up and she says, look, you guys, we're doing the same thing Zimbabwe did. Ed, we're doing the same thing Zimbabwe did. That's why this book is very powerful.
All right. I actually wrote down the title of that book. I'm actually going to read it this weekend. It's in the other office. $1 trillion Zimbabwe note.
Yes.
Right? I know you can buy them on Amazon too, but it's representative of the fact of what Ben Franklin, I think, was, if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it.
And people don't learn from history.
Yeah, well, that's financial literacy, right? I mean, you know, not only Zimbabwe, but we saw it in Argentina, most recently Venezuela. And it just continues to, unfortunately, reinvent itself.
But
so
if you read this book, you'll recognize we're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
It's only a matter of time now. The good news is I like Bitcoin. So I tell people my age, you know, take some of your money, buy one Bitcoin, $60,000, whatever it is. Because Bitcoin goes up in value where the dollar comes down.
So where do you think Bitcoin's going to go? Just out of curiosity, in your thoughts, where?
I'm counting on about $1 million. So
really?
I have 73. It was a goofy thing. I bought one just to see if I could buy a house for one Bitcoin, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, so absolutely.
I bought it for $6,000, and now it's up about $65,000. If it hits $120,000, I can buy a house. It's just a game, you know. Money.
Yep, yep.
I learned it playing Monopoly, four greenhouses, red hotels.
All right. So you're a hunter, right? Which I love. I am too. When you go on these trips, so when you were in Africa, what were you hunting for?
I hate to say this, but I'm an elephant hunter.
Are you really?
Yeah. I've shot 16 so far.
Oh, have you really?
I stand right in front of them and let them charge.
Do you? All right. So what? All right. I got to ask. So what size caliber?
Look at this thing here, you know. I was designed to be a Marine helicopter gunship pilot because we're not sane, you know.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Really, the saddest thing was when your friends don't come back, you know, where we're carrier based.
Yeah.
And you sit there and your friend's aircraft doesn't come back and they're gone. You know? So I went to visit them at the Vietnam Wall, you know, to say goodbye to them there. It was character building, that war. I don't recommend it, but we're going into it right now with Israel. You know, I think we're in it. World War III is coming.
So say that. Do you think there's going to be a slowdown or somewhat of a stay, if you will, if Trump's elected, just because he's not going to stand for it? Or do you think the momentum has gotten to the point where there is no stopping it?
I should have had a picture sent to you. I'm sitting next to Trump with his patch on his ear. We're in Milwaukee for the RNC, Republican National Committee. And we're sitting there and he was watching himself be shot. It was surreal. And he goes, and I didn't want to say anything. You know, what John Kennedy said, you know, President Kennedy, he says, if they're going to get you, they're going to get you. So it was prophetic. You know, Kennedy was a great man. So was Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. We had some great leaders during the 60s. Then we had Reagan, now Trump. Of course, it's Hillary and Kamala.
Well, you know, Dan Bongino said early on before the first event in Pennsylvania, in Butler, Pennsylvania, that they're going to try and take him out. And then after Butler, he said, yeah, they're going to do it again. And I think they just said it this morning, too, that Rand has already said that whether he's elected or not, they're going to keep coming after him. So that just tells you the threat that they believe that he is, because he's not playing by the rules that they want him to. He's got his values that he's going to continue to adhere to.
He's a courageous man, you know, courageous man.
How long have you known Trump for?
About 25 years now. We started working together on the Art of the Deal, you know.
Really?
We bought this book here, Midas Touch, and they're for sale at Rich Dad for $50, and the money goes to Trump's election. And I love the guy. I mean, I have tremendous respect for him. He's funny as hell. You know, that's his problem. He's funny. People don't think he's funny.
Well, you know what? Here's the one thing. What, you love him or hate him, okay? I mean, you've got to appreciate the fact that he is what he is. There's nothing that's being hidden. You don't have to guess what he's thinking, because he's going to tell you.
I was sitting in a meeting with him and Chris Christie walked in, you know. And Chris Christie is bigger in real life than he is on. He's pretty big in pictures and TV, but he's even bigger in real life. And Dial looks up and goes, "Hey, Chris, lost a few pounds, huh?" The whole room cracks up. I felt sorry for Chris, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, I think these interviews that he's doing, well, on both sides, right? The interviews that Kamala is or is not doing is definitely benefiting us. And the interviews that Trump is doing is benefiting us. I understand, I guess, the interview that he did with Joe Rogan is getting ready to drop next week. So that's going to be the icing on the cake. Yeah. I really think that. And I did want to tell you that I was telling you about dinner last night with a very dear friend of mine and his wife and his son and his fiance and me and my wife. And so I told him that, you know, we were talking today. And so Grant pulls up his phone and you took a picture with Grant at the RNC this year.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, you know what? You should have sent that to me so I could. I was thinking, oh, my gosh, I should have showed that to you. But yeah. And he said that the RNC was, you know, for a 25-year-old, you know, he said it was unbelievably impactful.
Yeah. Another thing that last night I was having dinner also with a Dr. Chris Martinson. He's a PhD in some kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a guy, when he was at, he took all the sounds from Butler. He says there was two guns.
Yes.
I went, holy mackerel. I was having dinner with him last night. He says there was two guns and one Secret Service agent missed, not unaccounted for. And so I was on stage with Bobby Kennedy Jr. when he switched sides. So Bobby Kennedy and I were talking, and he has a Secret Service. Well, those guys, I didn't trust them either. I mean, they're just standing right behind of us, you know, going, who are these guys? So like we saw, as a Marine second lieutenant, the bullet sometimes came from the back, because if you didn't trust your leader, you took him out. And thank God I survived. But you have to, your troops have to respect you, you know, and trust you. So
yeah, the Marine Corps was the best
training for me personally, because I was a punky surfer kid, you know.
Well, I think that Dr. Mortensen, who you had dinner with last night, I was listening. I think I went to his website early on and was listening to the audio tapes. And he had the breakdown so that you can actually hear the frequencies of the different calibers. Is it the same gentleman?
His name is M.A.R. Martinson.
Martinson. Chris. Yeah. Yep. That's him. Yep. Absolutely. And it was fascinating. You could tell the difference from an untrained ear like mine. You know, I'm a shooter. I love to hunt. But still, to be able to tell that big of a difference in the audio tapes, it was night and day. I mean, you couldn't even argue it. So let me ask you this. If you were to write Rich Dad, Poor Dad today, would you change anything in the book? Do you think the philosophies would still hold true? What would you add to it, especially with this AI kind of gig economy?
Well, I wouldn't change much on it because, like I said, I flunked out of high school twice because I can't write. And, you know, if you saw me in high school back in 65, I said, someday this guy would be a writer. You'd go, no, there's no way. You know? There's no way. But it was just a story of my rich dad, like I said, was my best friend's father. And he never went to school. So he had to learn money by working at his father's business. So when I was a kid and Rich Dad's son and I were best friends, he had us working in the business. We learned money without the fluff of the Fed and all that other stuff, you know, and school teachers. And we learned a lot. We just learned a lot and how to deal with people. On Saturdays, he'd have his meeting with his teams, and I watched my rich dad run his teams. Whereas my poor dad was 6'4" for Japanese, that's fairly tall, but he was head of the teachers union. And at my house in Hawaii, my father would have his teachers union friends at our house. I got the creeps. You know, I just got the creeps watching them. It was nothing about education. All they wanted was power, more time off, and more money. You know, the teachers, so today, what's the most powerful union in America is the NEA, National Education Association, you know. And then if you read this book here, Communist Manifesto, it says, workers of the world unite. So when I graduated from Kings Point, the Merchant Marine Academy, I refused to join the union. I'm not against unions, but personally, I would have joined one.
Mm-hmm.
So just because I read this book here, and my father was such a hardcore, poor dad was such a hardcore union guy. So it was really a contrast in two different philosophies, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Rich dad, a capitalist, poor dad, Marxist. I tell you, man, it's And that's the one thing I learned at King's Point is that acta non verba, watch what a person does, not what they say. Amen. So when Biden came to office, his first act was to cut the Keystone Pipeline, and oil went from 30 to 130. I knew exactly what he's going to do. He's going to divide the middle class, and then we're on the verge of revolution. That's what Ray Dalio was calling for. He says, we're probably on the verge of civil war right now. The more the gap gets wider, the more chance of civil unrest we have. So this book here was a very, very powerful book for me to read and understand. I was teaching at Arizona State University. I should never have done it, you know. But I was teaching students, gifted kids, you know, about capitalism. I brought my oil guys in there, brought my rancher guys in there. I only invest in things I can't print, if you know what I mean.
Right.
So I had my Wagyu cattle guys there and all this. And the 39 professors hung me out to dry. They called me a quack, this, brainwashing people. And I said, I should never come to this campus, you know. Our schools today are toxic, and it's indoctrination into Marxism.
I agree. Did you see, I think it was it yesterday? The day, it was this week, earlier this week, so this is Friday. Someone made a $25 million donation to Clemson University to teach capitalism. It was to open a school of capitalism. Did you see that?
Oh, I didn't see that.
Well, you know what? Because the pendulum, right? I mean, it has swung so far one way. It's actually starting to come back the other way, which is good. But I agree. You know, it really is indoctrination at all levels, starting in elementary school all the way through. So, you know, in this philosophy of, you know, everyone's got to go to college and go in debt. I mean, it's almost $2 trillion in student loan debt is ridiculous.
And guess who pushed that?
Yeah.
Barack Hussein Obama.
Yep.
He's one of the nastiest SOBs I've ever seen. He's from Hawaii, too. My friends know him fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
They went to school with him at Punahou School in Hawaii. Rich kid. But he pretends to be a poor kid.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, come on. You know, how do you tell a politician's lying when his lips are moving? You know, watch what they do, not what they say.
That's right. Absolutely. All right. So let me just ask one last question, if you don't mind. I know we're short on time, so I appreciate your indulgence here. All right. So you've already recommended that everyone should have at least one Bitcoin. How about gold and silver as far as they're part of their portfolio? So I'm a big believer. I don't believe in the paper stuff. I like the physical, tangible gold and silver, precious metals, not where someone else is having it, but where I actually custody it. So how much do you think people should have, you know, as part of their overall net worth of gold and silver?
Well, if what the Marines say, if you've done it, it's not a lie. And it's not bragging. I have tons. I have tons of gold and silver. I own the mines. So I drank the Kool-Aid on gold in Vietnam because I was in Vietnam when Tricky Dick took the dollar off the gold standard. So I'll leave you with this here. I hold this up like this, you know. Said, here's a Kennedy half dollar. Here's a $10 bill. And I say, who wants a $10 bill? Everybody goes for this. Which is worth more? This.
That. Absolutely. Yep.
This was the last year of silver coins, 64.
64.
And then Gresham's Law took over. You know, when fake money enters the system, good mm-hmm. money goes into hiding. So I'd rather have real money than fake money. But 99% of people go for this.
Because they've been indoctrinated. That's what they've been taught. They don't understand. It goes back to financial literacy.
Yes.
You know,
that's why Rich Dad pointed that was three rules. Rich don't work for money. Your house is not an asset and savers are losers. But you got to know what you're saving. You know what
right.
I mean?
So
I save gold, silver. I like Bitcoin today. The more I study, like, you know, Michael Saylor, he's hardcore guy. I listen to him all the time. And then Paul Tudor Jones came out in favor of Bitcoin. So the guys are considered authorities in that world I listen to. So one Bitcoin's about $60,000-$70,000 and just hang on tight. You know,
I agree.
I
agree. Well, Robert, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Hopefully after the first of the year, we can get you back on after the election and we can kind of see all the good things that are coming down the pike. So I appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
As Marines say, semper fi.
Semper fi.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Hey, when was the last time you tested your fitness level, not your workout routine. I'm talking about your financial endurance. Because if saving to a 401k is the extent of your effort, it is time for you to start shaping up. And Ed Sedell is here to help you do that with the Retirement Trainer. It's his podcast to help you examine your financial stamina and learn the questions you should be asking and areas to focus on to help you get to that place you've been working so hard for, a happy, comfortable retirement. And it's not as hard as some might have made you believe. Ed's broken it down into 5 simple steps. It's the Retirement Fitness Plan, which he personally created to help clarify key areas of your financial life. Learn more about the Retirement Fitness Plan at EGSIfinancial.com. Then subscribe, follow, and listen to the Retirement Trainer on Apple Podcasts, your iHeart app, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. Investment advisory services offered through EGSI Investment Management, DBA EGSI Financial Group, a registered investment advisor. Insurance and annuities offered through EGSI Financial Services, Inc., Ohio License Number 102-0619.